You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 505 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Sunday evening, back in the home studio after being in the building for a 106-82 victory for the Atlanta Hawks over the Miami Heat. A pretty fun game in a lot of ways, although the first half was definitely a slog, to be sure. There were some highlights, there were some entertaining things, and in the end, the Hawks played well, especially in the second half. Lloyd Pierce pointed that out as well. Before we get to the actual game stuff, as we always do on a recap podcast like this, there were two notes to hit on before the game actually began. The first one being that Mari Spellman is back with the Hawks. He was recalled from Erie on Sunday morning. That was alluded to on our last podcast. If you heard that one over the weekend, I sort of predicted that in some ways. That was not inside information, I promise you, but just sort of some common sense stuff there when it came to Spellman. Erie does not play again until Friday, and Spellman played three games down there, including Friday night's game. Made a lot of sense to go ahead and bring him back with the Hawks going on the road after this on Sunday. He did not really play in the competitive portion of this game. We'll talk about that more later on, obviously, but no big surprise that Spellman decided to come back here. The Hawks decided to bring him back here, I should say. He's just more of an insurance policy. He's clearly not in the greatest shape right now. You can sort of tell that watching him play in Erie. I do want to recommend a piece from Jeff Siegel that he wrote. Obviously friend of the program, Jeff Siegel, who writes for me over at PeachtreeHoops.com. He wrote about Spellman's trip to the G League, sort of takeaways from that, and how it sort of outlines his future prospects. So go ahead and read that at PeachtreeHoops.com for a deeper look. But we'll see more of him in the future, I'm sure, because he's now back with Atlanta. Only other thing that was sort of a pregame item was that DeAndre Bembry got the start in the spot for the Hawks. Lloyd Pierce noted that before the game began, and his pregame availability, and that basically alluded to the fact that, as I've been saying pretty much throughout the season, Pierce likes Bembry in a reserve role. It was a mild surprise to some that he was not starting in the absence of Kent Bazemore. They elected to go with Daniel Hamilton for the first handful of games. With that said, it didn't really surprise me. I said that on the podcast as well, but Pierce sort of let the cat out of the bag here, and that his assistants were, I guess, pressing him to go ahead and start Bembry in the spot. And then after the game ended, he sort of tongue-in-cheek with a smile talked about how he should have obviously done that a long time ago. That was definitely not a dead serious comment from Pierce, but with the Hawks getting the win here, Bembry played well, and we'll see how long that lasts as well. But he did say coming into the game, even before starting, and then reaffirmed that after the game, that the plan is to have Bembry start on this entire week of games. That includes today and then the three-game road trip the Hawks will be on after this contest is over. So we'll see how Bembry looks in that role. He's clearly the second-best wing the Hawks have right now. I think he's a better player than Hamilton and Dorsey, to be sure. Anderson's sort of a different story in some ways. But I will say, Bembry is someone who they should be looking to play a lot more than he has been. Maybe not more than he has been. I think it's just easier to play someone starter level minutes when he's actually starting games. I sort of understood the stagger that the Hawks wanted and having Bembry in that reserve role, keeping him comfortable in a role that he had been playing. But if you're going to be playing a guy, upper 20s, low 30s in terms of minutes, as the Hawks probably will be with Bembry for the future until Bazemore and Prince return, it's just easier to do that as a starter. And he played well in this game. We'll talk about that more in a moment. So we can get to the game itself here. Obviously, at the end of the day, it's a 24-point win. It was definitely a flowing game in some ways, highs and lows. The first half was sort of a slog. Second half was a lot more fun. And at the outset, it was all Hawks in the opening minutes. The Hawks actually went on a 13-2 run to open the game off. That was accompanied by the first 5 points of the game from Trae Young. He had a floater on his first trip and then hit a wing three on the second trip. He actually has been very, very good against Miami this year. Coming into the game, he was averaging about 20-12 against the Heat coming in. And then, of course, he had 19 points in this spot. We'll talk about him more later. But a nice start from Trae and the entire roster. Miami was not playing well really in the entire game, but especially in the first half. The first quarter offensively, they were 1-8 from the floor with two turnovers in the opening minutes. and the Hawks led by as many as 12 in the first quarter. There was one brief highlight for the Heat in the first quarter, and that was the fact that Dwayne Wade sort of made the play of the night. Before that, he was actually greeted with a huge ovation. A lot of Wade fans in the building. Not a huge surprise there. It's going to be his last trip to Atlanta. He's a definite, you know, first ballot Hall of Fame legendary type of player, so no huge surprise that the Hawks sort of rolled the red carpet out a little bit. There was a tribute video for him that featured a lot of words from Vince Carter, and that was the appropriate thing to do. But, you know, later on in the quarter, he delivered what was a pretty obscene pass over his head to Derrick Jones Jr. For a lob dunk in transition. That was definitely the highlight of the night in terms of just the most entertaining part of the game, especially from the Heat. But aside from that, the first quarter was kind of hideous, to be honest with you. Both teams combined to shoot 16 of 52 from the floor. 16 of 52 is pretty rough, obviously. Atlanta had the edge at the end of the first quarter because of the fact that they had 8 offensive rebounds in the first quarter, and they also didn't really turn the ball over that much and had 2 threes. The Heat were 0 of 7 from 3. That continued throughout the game. But aside from that, the entire first half, basically, it was just the 13-2 run at the open. Everything else was really ugly for both teams, but especially for Atlanta. The second quarter was sort of back and forth in some ways. Miami opened with a 9-0 run to take the lead after their really rough first quarter. I thought Kevin Herter really struggled in the first half. That's something I had in my notes a couple of times. I didn't think he was terrible in the game necessarily overall, but the first half, he definitely struggled, to be sure, in terms of a couple of just not playing with force, playing tentatively, et cetera, et cetera. The Hawks played pretty short rotation in the first half. They only played 9 guys for the first 19 minutes or so. They went to Tyler Dorsey finally late in the first half as the 10th man. But honestly, for most of this game, it was a 9-man rotation for Atlanta, which isn't a huge surprise for some NBA teams. But the Hawks have been playing 10, 11, 12 guys per game this season on a pretty regular basis. So to see them go with 9 was a little, at least mildly surprising to me. Dorsey did play a little bit more than the other guys in this spot, but a pretty short rotation from Pierce. There was even a stretch in the second quarter where the Hawks used a Trae Young, Jeremy Lin, Tyler Dorsey combination for a brief moment. That was a pretty small lineup, especially against a team in Miami that's actually playing pretty big right now. For instance, Miami's basically playing Justice Winslow as their starting point guard, and he's like power forward size in today's NBA. So a sort of a weird team in the Heat in a lot of ways, but I had no problem with just trying some stuff. At that point in time, Atlanta's offense was struggling so badly that it just felt like Pierce was trying to get some offense on the floor, and that usually definitely, I mean, it's obviously an offense-first lineup when you're talking about playing Young, Lin, and Dorsey playing together, but, you know, didn't kill him, and that was kind of just something to note for the future. A 7-0 run by the Hawks to take a 5-point lead late in the first quarter, and then in the first half, and then Miami scored the last 4 points to settle in at 38-37. A pretty comical offensive performance on both ends of the floor for this team. For these two teams, I should say. In fact, sort of a perfect way to describe this is that no player on either team reached double figures in the first half. That's a pretty rare occurrence. It's not that rare. It's not like crazy, you know, all-time rare, but you normally see at least one player on one of the two teams get to 10 points before the half. That didn't happen here. John Collins had 9, and everybody else was 8 or below. That's pretty crazy to see. First half numbers, the Hawks shot 31% from the floor, 27% from 3, and had 13 turnovers in the first half. That's really bad. About a 75 offensive rating somewhere in there. Miami shot 33% from the floor, 1 of 16 from 3. 1 of 16 from 3 in the first half from the Heat. That's obviously terrible. And 10 turnovers. It was the lowest scoring half allowed all season long for the Hawks defensively. They only allowed 37 points in the first half. Part of that was definitely Miami. Part of that was Atlanta's playing defense as well. I actually asked Lloyd Pierce about that after the game, and he referenced the fact that, you know, he would like to take credit for some of that, but Miami just didn't make shots too. It was definitely a mixed bag. I thought the Hawks played well defensively, and Pierce noted that, especially in the second half. Atlanta sort of stiffened up a little bit in the first half, though. Just a lot of bad shot making from Miami, which, you know, the Hawks took advantage of that, so, you know, credit to them. But again, you know, the season low in terms of, I guess, season best in terms of playing defense, in terms of, you know, point prevention in the first half. I'm not sure the Hawks played their best defensive half in terms of just actual execution, but, you know, the points are what matters at the end of the day. So 37 points, that was a season low. And then, by the way, spoiler alert, the 82 points that Miami scored was also a season low allowed by Atlanta. Although they did allow 45 in the second half, which is a little bit worse, but still 82 is worth noting. And a lot of that's Miami, but a lot of that's the Hawks as well. Second half was much more kind to the Hawks, as you probably would imagine. They were only up by 1 at the half and then won by 24 points. So that was the end of that. You know, the third quarter was basically the knockout blow. I will say a 41-21 advantage from the Hawks in the third quarter. It was a 12-3 opening run to begin the third quarter that was capped by threes from Bembry and Trae Young. That put the Hawks up by 10 points. And that was a large lead since early in the first quarter. And then a pair of threes actually in the early moments of that period from Trae Young, including a very, very, very deep step back. It was actually noted as about a 33-footer by the play-by-play. That seemed kind of aggressive, but it was definitely pretty long and as sort of a bomb. That was a big momentum play for the Hawks. Later on in the third quarter, they had a separate 18-3 run, which is also worth mentioning, to be sure. That was sort of the knockout blow in itself, was that 18-3 run put the Hawks up by a 75-52 margin. And there was a Kevin Herter three up in that run to go up by 14. There was a Daniel Hamilton three. There was a Jeremy Lin three. Miami sort of imploded offensively. And in general, the offense was great for the Hawks in the third quarter. A 65% from the floor clip, 55% from three. Jeremy Lin had 11 points by himself in the third quarter. He was fantastic, 5-6 from the floor in that period. Miami's was sort of pretty cool. Honestly, Miami's offense was kind of the same throughout the game. It was kind of just bad across the board, but their defense really kind of imploded in the third quarter. That was sort of the pivot point of the game. The Hawks made a ton of shots in the third. Miami didn't, and when the dust settled, they were up by 20-plus points, and that was sort of the end of that. The fourth quarter was pretty bland in a lot of ways. You know, at the end of the day, the Hawks win 27-24 in the fourth, but it was almost all garbage time. Miami never really made a run, which kind of surprised me. You know, normally you'll see a run go to like 15 or 16 or 17, somewhere in there. It never really got below like 18-20 in the entire fourth quarter, and the Hawks were pretty comfortable down the stretch. They ended up playing a couple of guys for the first time with about 3 minutes to go in Spellman and Justin Anderson. But yeah, sort of the end of the game was the third quarter. That was the big knockout blow, and credit to the Hawks for putting it together. You know, big picture offensively, the Hawks actually looked like they had a pretty good offensive night in this spot. A 108 offensive rating, which is nothing terribly exciting to write home about, but a pretty solid performance despite the ugly first half performance. 47% from the floor, 42% from three for the Hawks in this spot. 10 of 13 from the free throw line as well. That is, pretty solid across the board. A 108 offensive rating, again, pretty solid. It is one of those things where this game didn't feel like the Hawks were great offensively, but at the end of the day, you look up and they were actually pretty darn good. Most of that's because of the third quarter, as I mentioned before, but the entire second half was pretty good from the Hawks. 63% from the floor. 63% from the floor and a half. You know, the fourth quarter was, again, pretty much all garbage time, but still 7 of 13 from the floor, from three as well. Only three turnovers in the second half, and that was a pretty good performance offensively for Atlanta. Defensively, I mentioned before the 82 points allowed, an 84 offensive rating allowed by the Hawks in this game to Miami. They were really bad. You know, the Heat finished this game 5 of 34 from three. That's some of that's defense, I'm sure, but some of that's just bad shot making. Again, you know, you'd be sort of hard-pressed to find someone on Miami's team that played, like, legitimately well. I would say Wade was probably the closest in terms of their normal baseline. Maybe Wade and Derrick Jones Jr. Everybody else kind of struggled. Josh Richardson is their best player. He was not very good in this game, I didn't think. Whiteside was really rough. Justin Winslow was okay in some spots, but they were kind of bad. You know, it's one of those things where Miami came in, it's Saturday night in Atlanta. I'm not sure how much that plays into it, but it's not always a coincidence when a team comes into Atlanta on a weekend, is in the city for the Saturday night festivities potentially, and then gets off to a slow start, never really recovers. That was the case here. And just chalk that one up in some ways. But Miami just didn't play well. The Hawks did play well in the second half, legitimately. The first half was just sort of being lucky that Miami was not making shots. But the second half was a legitimately positive step forward from the Hawks. And the end result there is a 24-point victory. So that's plenty in terms of the big picture stuff in this game. I do want to take a moment to tell you guys about the Locked On Podcast Network. I am a huge fan of a couple different podcasts on the network. I'm a huge fan of Locked On Falcons, which I am a not-so-quiet Falcons fan. That's one of the teams I don't cover, so it's one of the I'm actually allowed to sort of be a raw fan of the Falcons still. I haven't grown up here, and I really enjoy the work of Aaron Freeman on that podcast. There's also a Locked On Wolverines podcast. I'm a Michigan fan. That's a fun one. To be sure, if you are a Locked On, you know, there's a Locked On Georgia, Locked On Tennessee, whatever NFL team you like to listen to, whatever baseball team you like to listen to, there's all those kinds of podcasts. There's also Locked On NBA National, Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy Basketball. There's all kinds of big picture podcasts, small picture podcasts, everything you like about podcasts, we should be able to cover for you in this spot. So just obviously subscribe to this podcast. That'd be huge for me and the entire network. But check out the podcast of your choice. There's plenty of options for you. And after the short break, we'll come back and talk more about the individual performances in this game. All right, and we're back to talk about the individual stuff in this game. A pretty positive overall performance, as I mentioned before, but individually, a lot of guys that just played pretty solidly, pretty well. There were five guys in double figures from the Hawks and seven guys with 8 points or more. That's usually a pretty good indication of a nice, strong balance. Off the bench, the headliner was Jeremy Lin, 15 points, 5 assists for Jeremy in 17 minutes. 7-9 from the floor, 1-1 from three. A very, very efficient quality performance from Jeremy Lin. It was mostly done in the third quarter where he had 11 points, but just a steady hand performance. Deloy Pierce talked about that after the game. having that insurance policy, having that sort of safety net off the bench is very, very helpful. Lynn is not always this good, but he was definitely good in this game. And he's a, if not the best backup point guard in the league, he's on the very, very short list of that in his role right now. He's very, very good. And we saw that in this game. So, you know, shout out to Jeremy Lynn. He was a huge part of that run the third quarter, and it was just very, very solid across the board. Vince Carter, 8 points and 7 rebounds off the bench for him in 20 minutes, 3 of 6 from the floor, 2 of 5 from three. A nice game from Vince after a couple of shaky ones in the recent past, plus 14 in 20 minutes. I thought Vince was very, very solid here as well. Pretty good matchup for him, honestly, because Miami doesn't really have that guy to take advantage of him defensively in a lot of ways at the four spot, but Vince was definitely comfortable in his element here and played well. Alex Len, 4 points, 7 rebounds, and a steal for him in 20 minutes. Pretty quiet, all things considered, for Len, but he was 2 of 8 from the floor, which is kind of shaky in some ways. But I thought he was pretty solid, putting pressure on the rim, just being a vertical spacer in some ways. Didn't make a ton of shots, obviously, but I thought he was okay in this spot. Daniel Hamilton was pretty good, I thought, honestly. 9 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists for Daniel in 23 minutes. He got some post-game love from Andre Aldridge and the crew on Hawks coverage over there at Fox Sports Southeast, so good for him. That was a pretty funny scene. Dwayne Dedmon was in the locker rooms, definitely making it known that it was Daniel Hamilton time post game. They were very happy for him. It definitely seemed like that, and obviously it's a pretty good story to see him call off the bench. Bembry's gonna get the headlines here because he was just better in this game in some ways. But Hamilton played well in his reserve role. It's very, very clear that he is ahead of Dorsey and Anderson in the pecking order right now, which is kind of a surprise in some ways. But he's been earning more playing time. He's been playing well, and Hamilton adds sort of a different element to the table that those guys do. So, you know, shouts to him for this performance. And after that, Dorsey played 7 minutes, did not score, 2 assists and a steal, 2 turnovers. I thought he came in and played hard, but just didn't have too much going on there. And then Spellman and Anderson played 3 minutes each. Anderson had a nice tomahawk dunk down the stretch, but that was basically the only thing of note in pure garbage time for the two of those guys that came in with about 2.5, 3 minutes to go in the game. To the starters, the quietest game was Dwayne Dedmon, 9 points, and did have 11 rebounds, though, in 27 minutes, 4 of 8 from the floor, 0 of 2 from 3. I thought Dedmon was just fine. You know, had a block shot, was plus 19. The entire starting five was plus 19 or better. That's usually a pretty good sign. And honestly, this team has not been great with starters this season in an overall sense, but in this game, it was dominant with starters, both in the first and third quarters. Dedmon was very good, just solid across the board. Same thing. Wasn't like he made a ton of just popping wow plays, but just a nice performance from Dwayne Dedmon. Kevin Huerter struggled with his jump shot. 4 of 16 from the floor. 4 of 16 from the floor is going to get you beat a lot of times for Kevin Huerter, but he led the team in minutes again with 36. He's definitely the leader in the clubhouse when it comes to minutes right now without Bazemore and Prince. He had a 44 the other night. I think he's going to lead the team pretty much every night in minutes until those guys return. That makes a lot of sense. He's the team's best wing at the moment, but didn't have it going in terms of his shooting. I mentioned before, I thought he struggled in the first half. Credit to him, though, that he sort of righted the ship after halftime with his play, sort of his court game. You know, the shooting is kind of what it is. It's obviously a struggling night there from him, but 10 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, and 3 steals. He played much harder, much more with force after halftime, and you know, credit to him for bouncing back after a slow start. Trae Young had 19 points, only 2 assists, which is kind of surprising, 2 rebounds and 4 turnovers, but did have a nice shooting night, 6 of 14 from the floor, 3 of 3 from 3, including that 33-foot bomb early on, and then 4 of 6 from the free throw line. You know, 19 points, very solid, plus 21. It wasn't like he was incredible in this game. His passing's definitely been better on some nights, but his shooting is coming along. He continues to make shots now. He's up over 40% or so over the last 50 attempts or so, and that's very, very nice to see from Trae Young as a shooter. It's a small sample, but he's definitely coming around there, and that was sort of to be expected after the early struggles that he had. Elsewhere, Bembry, 17 points. You know, Pierce mentioned before, as I said, that he was very happy with Bembry's performance. He played with a lot of force. He was perfect from the floor in the second half, 7 of 7 from the floor. That's pretty impressive. It wasn't like he was taking a ton of tough shots, and honestly, I tweeted this in the first half. He had a couple of bad misses at the rim in the first half, so it wasn't like he was perfect in this game, but he just started making those around the rim in the second half, was playing with force, attacking the rim. Good to see him play that well. And defensively, he's definitely the best option the Hawks have on a lot of guys defensively. So a nice showing from him in his first start in a while. And then finally, John Collins, 13 points, 13 rebounds. A pretty quiet game, even from what Lloyd Pierce said after the game, but only 6 shot attempts, which is kind of jarring. It's not that you didn't notice John Collins in this game. He was definitely out there. He definitely plays with a lot of force and sort of flies around, but he didn't have a huge offensive impact, I didn't think, in terms of just him, his individual performance, but his gravity is definitely out there. The Hawks had him in the corner at different times, and he was drawing a lot of attention. It's one of those things where it's important to remember that it's not only stats that influence the game. Collins almost always is the guy that defenses are keying on, and rightly so. You know, there's a reason why the Hawks have been so much better since he returned from injury. Part of that was the guys he replaced, but part of that's just the fact that he's their best player, and he soaks a lot of attention. Collins is playing well. It wasn't like a, you know, over the moon game for him, but a very solid effort. And 13-13 in just a so-so solidish game. That tells you a lot about John Collins. He's been playing very, very well in the recent past. So, again, all things considered, a great performance from the Hawks. A 24-point win when they were 6-point underdogs is worth noting. You know, Miami, again, credit is the wrong word, but Miami did not play well in this game. That's probably the way that I would put it. The Heat contributed in a big way to the end result. With that said, the Hawks took advantage in a big way, won by 24 points against a team that's honestly probably better than them. Granted, it was in Atlanta, so I thought this was a game, and I talked about this before the game started in the preview and on Twitter, etc. I thought it was a pretty good spot for the Hawks in a lot of ways, but still, winning by 24 points was not something that I would have predicted. So credit to the Hawks for taking advantage of Miami's shortcomings and getting a win here. With that said, the next game for the Hawks will be against Toronto on Tuesday. That's obviously a spot that's really, really rough in a lot of ways. That, you know, at Toronto is a, you know, no one wants to go to Toronto right now. Toronto isn't playing as well as they were early on in the season. Still, you know, the Raptors are sort of a juggernaut in some ways when they have it going, and you know, talent wise they have a big edge over the Hawks. And by the way, they beat the Pacers by 16 points on Sunday night. I didn't see any of that game, but just worth noting because the Pacers have been red hot, and Toronto sort of righted that ship a little bit and knocked them off today. So a tough spot for the Hawks on this road trip to begin things on Tuesday. A 3-game road trip before they come home again next Sunday against the Bucks and Mike Budenholzer's return to Atlanta. That'll be fun to monitor. But again, please subscribe to the podcast. Please tell your friends about the podcast. You know, follow us, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, you know, Player.fm, all those different places that you like to listen to podcasts. We should be there. Overcast, all those spots. If you can think of a place that you listen to podcasts, if we're not there, please let me know that at BT Rollin on Twitter or at Locked On Hawks on Twitter. But if we are there, please tell your friends and subscribe, leave positive feedback, all that fun stuff. Thanks for listening, as always, everyone. I hope you guys enjoy this particular performance from the Hawks and this podcast, as always. And we'll start the week off on a high note with a win here. If you're a Hawks fan, I'm sure you're happy about that. And again, please stay tuned throughout the week. We'll come back after the Raptors game with the next podcast. Stay tuned for that.